This is After Dark number 5, this is tape number 12, and this is side 2. As the news is coming in, we'll get right back to Bruce Conti and talk about DXing.
This solar flux index, now how is that going to relate as far as the numbers are concerned? Are you looking for a high number, low number, and what numbers, what do the numbers actually mean?
Well, now you're getting a little beyond my expertise there.
Let me rephrase it then. If you wanted to target Central America, Caribbean, and such, what solar flux number are you kind of looking at?
I don't have that right in front of me here. And I can't think off the top of my head what the numbers would be.
Seems to me they kind of float between like 40 and 100 or something like that.
Yeah, and, let me see here. If you don't mind, excuse me a second. I have that information in front of me somewhere.
No problem.
But other than that, if you listen at 18 past the hour, they'll tell you whether it's quiet, you know, not just using the numbers, but they'll tell you whether it's quiet or stormy. And in fact, in DX News, every once in a while, you'll see the numbers listed. The Geomagnetic Survey, I believe the column is called.
Now, and are you looking for stormy or are you looking for calm for you picking up Caribbean?
Looking for stormy, definitely.
Okay, so the stormier the solar conditions are, the better off you are having of a chance of hearing Caribbean. And if it's calm, then you have a better chance of hearing, Sweden and England and some of the Europeans.
Yeah, and in fact, I just found it in the WRTH. There's a article on solar activity where they go in-depth on to what to look for in the sunspot cycle, although they don't really get into the numbers that deeply. Let's see. Okay, here we go. This is the A index. 0 to 14 is quiet, 15 to 24 is disturbed, and 35 and above is stormy. So you're looking for the higher numbers.
Okay, so the stormier you have it, the better off your conditions are.
Yeah.
For your DXing, the kind of stuff you're doing, the TAs and the Caribbean stuff, how worthwhile is the World Radio TV handbook to your DXing?
Oh, you need it. You know, I guess I have to apologize for some of the DX Audio Service members because there is an audio version of this book.
Oh, there is?
There is.
Ah, okay. I didn't know there was.
No, I was saying there isn't.
Oh, there isn't?
Oh.
Well, that's something we'll have to investigate. Maybe getting some, getting the ability to, maybe read that on the audio service sometime.
But, yeah, because there's all sorts of neat information in here. They've got a world timetable so you can determine what time it is in the country. That's also another way to identify countries, by the way, is, if you can understand the language enough to pick out when they're telling the time, then you just look it up and see what countries that speak that language are in that time zone, and that can help. That's helped me a few times in trying to identify stations. And they have a complete listing of all the medium wave stations around the world, with the exception of the United States graveyarders. They don't bother to list those.
Besides the World Radio TV Handbook, is there any other publications which help you?
Well, this is the one I use all the time. I suppose there are a few other publications out there, but I really don't use any of the others besides the World Radio TV Handbook.
Probably the AM radio log for the domestic stuff.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah, definitely. And talking about domestics, you definitely need the NRC's AM radio log. Can't do without it.
In the written form, is there any other reprints, textbooks, any other information which is available for somebody who really wants to learn more about DXing, both TAs and domestics?
Let's see. Definitely you'd want the DXpedition Handbook by Sean Axelrod. That's also available through the National Radio Club. A good magazine that I would recommend getting is Monitoring Times, although it's pretty much a promotion for Grove Enterprises. There's also a lot of good information in here. Not so much in the AM or medium wave signals, but it's got a good short wave section, complete with schedules, English language programs, and things of that sort. And they often run articles about tips on QSLing and what's happening, what the latest receivers are looking like as far as what's coming out, and just all sorts of neat stuff in this book or in this magazine.
Let me switch tracks here on you and hit you with some other information or other questions. It occurs to me that you have a band of frequencies here, the medium wave frequencies, which go up to 1600 and, of course, up to 1700 very soon. Is there any DXing to be done, say, between 1700 and 4 kilohertz?
Definitely. That's where you get into a lot of the... Well, to start, let's look at Latin America. For the most part, Latin America, or down along the equator, they have a problem with noise from atmospheric noise from lightning. You know, that's often a big problem down there. And plus, with the mountains and everything else, the medium wave signals aren't always as good as the short wave signals. So you find quite a few Latin American nations run short wave broadcast stations that are pretty much the same as the medium wave stations.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pretty interesting to listen to. You also get quite a few similar in Indonesia out that direction and Central Africa. So those are the types of things I listen for in, let's say, under 5,000 kilohertz. And let's see, I guess also above 1,600, you've got a few beacons and... you've got these fishing buoys and all sorts of other neat stuff to look for.
And those are those things that kind of sound like a chirp ever so often, right?
Or you get these, the fishing buoys are kind of markers they use to mark the location of where they've dropped fishing nets. And you'll hear these things that are just sending out code signals, 8W8 followed by some letters, and you'll hear other things of that sort. And, of course, none of this stuff is QSL-able.
You wouldn't have any idea where it was.
No.
Yeah. So what frequencies are those, usually those in, from 1600 to 1650 or so, or they go higher?
They're up to 1700 or so, I guess.
Are they?
And then, of course, you've got your Traveler's Information Service stations. That's another thing that's kind of neat to listen for if you're on a coastal location, because you'd be surprised at how many of these you can pick up. I know out on the coast here in New England, you'll pick up the stuff as far south as North Carolina and up to Maine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, those are such low powers, though.
Yeah, but once you get that water path and the low horizon, then they seem to do pretty good. Even here in New Hampshire, I pick up 1620 from Connecticut, and the one that's out on Roosevelt Island out by New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So they seem to do pretty good for 10 watts. If you think back to the early days of radio, you had people listening with receivers that weren't nearly as good as what's available today, and they were picking up stations from across the nation running no more than 100 watts or so.
Very true. What about going down to the other end of the dial? Is there anything to be had 530 and below?
There are a few broadcast stations down there, believe it or not. And actually, some of those are fairly easy to hear. Let's see. I'll give you a couple of targets here. Other than that, you've also got the same thing, aeronautical or ocean-type beacons. But let's see, Algeria on 252 kilohertz is a fairly easy catch. Same at,
England's got a few of them too, don't they?
Yeah, not many though. I don't know if they're actually running any at this point. Let's see. Well, actually, I guess, it looks like we have, 198 kilohertz. England's got a couple. We have, France on 162 kilohertz is a fairly easy catch, and 216 kilohertz. Luxembourg on 234 kilohertz. There are a few of them down there.
And what kind of programming would you find on that?
A lot of times they're parallel to the medium wave programming. Okay. Same type of thing.
Now, what would they use that for over in Europe? Is there actually a receiver that people listen to? I mean, is it basically used to fill in a area which cannot be covered with medium wave?
The one advantage that long wave has is it sinks or penetrates into the earth fairly well, so the ground wave signal can be fairly strong and steady. So a lot of times the long wave signals are used, let's say for ship to shore communications or to communicate with submarines, because the signal will penetrate far enough into the earth. So I think it's basically for the reliability. You know, you don't have to deal with the propagation problems or atmospheric problems as much in the long wave. You get a much more steady, consistent signal.
Well, Bruce, I think we've just about talked about everything.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to thank you for being on our DX Audio Service After Dark issue.
Well, you're welcome.
This is the DX Audio Service.
In 1992, Radio Only magazine had an interesting article talking about the new age of talk radio, and what we thought we'd do is read you that, and then follow it up with a new story which will appear in Time magazine. The new age of talk radio. You're driving around Washington, minding your own business. Suddenly on the radio, it sounds like the apocalypse. Air raid sirens. The radio is drifting off frequency. For certain, it's an invasion. Calling all those trapped and enslaved, held within the Beltway, controlled by the liberal bureaucratic alliance. This is the voice of hope. Radio Free DC, WJFK. We are penetrating the jamming signal of the liberal alliance emanating from the transmitters of the rooftop of the Washington Post and the Capitol building. It's just Washington's most popular Watergate operative, G. Gordon Liddy, overexposing himself again, opening his daily talk show. This guy for real? There exists a huge nation, free, 255 million people who want only to be able to keep the fruits of their labor. To be free of bureaucratic nannyism, political correctness, nitwittery. We shall one day bring you the truth, reality, political incorrectness, and common sense. These days, Liddy's public talents are focused on Infinity's WJFK Washington. Today is Election Day. Liddy's on the road. We have penetrated, overtly this time, the Democratic headquarters. We are here, speaking to you from the media center of the Clinton campaign in Little Rock, Arkansas. I did not bring my tools with me this time, but I did bring my microphones. Liddy is part of the new wave of talk hosts whose roots are not in radio, who are bigger than their shows. They got famous or infamous doing something else. But if you get past the Watergate stuff, is there anything else? The Washington, D.C. ratings say yes, so far. WJFK's Middays with Liddy beats Rush Limbaugh on WMAL 25-54 in the spring, but slid behind him again in the summer book. Word is, if Liddy has a good fall Arbitron, he could be moving to your market as the next player in syndication orgy that gives birth to the talk radio renaissance. But whatever you do, don't call it talk radio. Program director Jack Silver oversees the loony bin known as WLUP AM in Chicago, positioned on the air as Chicago's entertainment and sports station. But for the industry, Silver makes this concession. The best way to describe it would be morning shows all day. I call it personality talk for people our age. That's 25 to 54. The demo some talk stations are now able to capture with a very uncharacteristic show and unpredictable hosts. Talk is becoming a respectable moneymaker again. Silver's lineup on WLUP AM pulls in some impressive shares. These guys are number one with adults 18 to 54. So with advertisers, all you get is the cream de la cream. Anheuser-Busch is our number one client. You own every beer break. Then you get Saab. It's all upscale in Scarborough. The station is number one with median income in Chicago. We beat the classical station. All that without spinning tunes. Silver believes that's where some of his colleagues are making a mistake.
For most of my friends who are my age, that is 34, music is a very small part of their lives. One of Silver's on-air WLUP slogans, AM 1000, if we screw up, we'll play a song. But while The Loop gets a lot of attention and admiration for its demos, some more traditional talk programmers aren't losing any sleep over the possibility of a WLUP-style talk format coming to their market. David Reimer, program taker at WWDB-FM in Philadelphia. It's tough to create personalities like that. You can't just go out and find them. I think they have a unique mix and have a tremendous amount of talent available to them. There are fewer breeding grounds for good talent because of network and syndicated radio. It's becoming harder and harder to find any distinct local talent. I think any time you see a radio station that tries, in some wholesome way, to have this vision of what their station should be and import talent from a bunch of places figuring it's going to work, it often doesn't. That's a lot of homespun talent there at WLUP, people who have been in the market for a long time. I think it's kind of very unique. Silver has a different view of the farm system. The great future talk talent is on the air right now. The problem is, they're playing music. For young guys coming up, I'm saying, take a guy like JR, who does the morning show on WZOU in Boston, and tell him to stop playing those silly records and let him talk. And let him take phone calls. And the topics, instead of abortion, should boxer shorts, friend or foe? But even if a good, young-skewing talk format threatens your station, maybe you should take the solace of Silver's prediction that it will be great for the industry. We're good for the economy. There's a lot of people working here. I think the future growth of programmers, producers, and air talent will be the personality talk field. Say I'm a program director. What am I going to do? I go to L.A. and work at Star 99.7 and figure out a way to play more Bread records than KOST? Talk is the fastest growing format, according to the M Street Journal. The number of stations is up 110% since 1989. Sure, lots of it is attributed to the near disappearance of music from the AM dial. But even the man who brought us Rush Limbaugh can't believe the format's growth. Ed McLaughlin is chairman of EFM Media. I'm always amazed we're on 530 stations because I never dreamed there would be that many in the format. Clearly, the sheer amount of syndicated talk programs available has made a difference, but don't mistake that with boom days for the networks. To the contrary, talk programming by the major networks has been a failure. Even the smaller EMF style of networking took time to get rolling and bring in the real dollars that only big market clearances could deliver. It wasn't until October of this year that McLaughlin finally cracked his last big market, Philadelphia. The Philadelphia holdout was WWDB, programmed by David Reimer. He's a former ABC talk radio programmer who used to face the network versus local debate from the other side of the table. WWDB's business reasons for resisting Limbaugh's 4 minute an hour inventory are a good demonstration of why the talk syndication business has been a tough nut to crack. Even in a bad economy, it meant taking away program specific inventory. These weren't advertisers who just said, I want to be on WWDB at noon. There were people who said, I want to be on the Susan Bray show. I want to be on Irv Homer's show. So we've taken away a lot of that inventory and are faced with a completely different sale. We're used to selling retail and to people who can touch and know our talent. People who get live spots done, it's just a completely different approach that we're growing into. So in the end, Reimer and WWDB had to act defensively. We were concerned that any underperforming radio station would, all of a sudden, see the light and say, we're going to build a talk station around Rush. I didn't want to put myself in the position of just sitting here and waiting to see who is going to do it and what they're going to do to us. Now that EFM and Limbaugh have done it successfully, plenty of folks are all ready to launch the second wage. Reimer,
everybody figured middays were untouchable for a significant radio station. Now that they have the scent of money, and they're trying to see if they can do what Rush did. Future midday syndicated talkers that we know about for sure could include Liddy and the Grease Man, just signed on by Affinity for a yet-to-be-fixed shift. And then there are the Westwood One trial balloons about daytime airings of Larry King. The idea appeared to have been stillborn for lack of key affiliates available to clear the show. EFM's McLaughlin knows the problem well from years spent trying to get Limbaugh cleared. Stations have come to us and said, look, we could use some more product. Are you going to produce anything more? We've had that request, but not so much from the top 20 markets, though, who, generally speaking, aren't very difficult to get cleared. It wasn't easy even with Rush. We just got our last market in the top 100, Philadelphia. Accumulating a stable, high-profile, highly paid personality goes against the grain of programmers and GMs who cut their teeth in the plug-in-a-jock 80s. The thought of building a station of morning shows all day around demanding egomaniacs scares the living daylights out of some owners. But there are rewards for the risks, namely, huge savings in promotional costs. Don Epstein is G. Gordon Liddy's manager. When we brought Liddy into Washington, the papers were doing a front-page story on it. Everybody was interested in it. He was getting a lot of press, which normally would have not been gotten. That's one of the reasons the syndicated radio market is interested in this as well. If they bring in someone like Gordon Liddy into Iowa, or someplace like that, he automatically gets an exposure which allows the radio station to feel the impact on the front page of the newspapers. How much money did WJFK save on advertising as a result of bringing him in? And the hosts keep making news. Liddy pops up on national talk shows or even news shows offering expert commentary based on his Watergate days. Epstein also represents Guardian Angels founder Curtis Sliwa and wife Lisa, who do mornings on WABC in New York. When Curtis and Lisa leave the studio and they go out and become the Guardian Angels and then do something positive with the Guardian Angels, the radio station then becomes the recipient of the exposure. So how do you decide who can do radio? There are a lot of celebrities out there, and the tactic has been tried before. WCAU AM Philadelphia had moderate success putting former mayor Frank Rizzo in afternoon drive. Now all eyes are on KFI AM Los Angeles, where exiled police chief Daryl Gates is behind the mic. Epstein's tactic has been to develop a talent from a lecture circuit. That's what Liddy and the Sliwas were up to before Epstein started pitching them for radio. People became very stimulated by them. They also had appearances on talk shows. And they were good guests. We figured that if audiences were coming out to see these individuals, and they were consistent night after night after night, maintaining these audiences for 2.5 hours, then a natural extension would be radio. No question. Not every market has that kind of talent sitting around waiting to be molded into the latest talk radio discovery. That's why syndication looks so appealing. But even at that level, syndicators like EFM's McLaughlin see a drought. I haven't come out with any other shows. Not so much because I didn't think I could get a hearing with the stations. It's just that I haven't found the talent that would equal the kind of success that we would need in order to get those big stations to listen to us. Whether or not stations finding talent is becoming quite clear that audience desire something better than what most talk radio has delivered to date. McLaughlin says stations would put on programs that were important and informative, but were not terribly exciting. I think the answer really is that most of the talk stations are looking for strong personality-driven programs, where the personality becomes much more important and is really the program, as opposed to the old kind of talk radio where the announcer says, "You're on the air, caller. Go ahead." That article was from a 1992 radio-only magazine entitled The New Age of Talk Radio.
This next article comes from Time Magazine from their cover story, Look Who's Talking. The explosion of radio call-in shows has created a new form of electronic populism and demagoguery. This article was written by Mr. Richard Corliss. Hi there, listeners. This is Rash Limbast, the Liberals' Limbaugh, with all the news you need to know. Well, we just had another beaut from Newt. The speaker hired a House historian who thought Nazism should be taught in schools. That's good sound republicanism. Instead of condoms, let's distribute SS armbands. Newt's dumped her, but in the nicest way. He visited her and served her with divorce papers. And how about term limits? That great notion of an electorate that can't trust themselves to vote the rascals out. The old guard Republicans must love that. Newt's in his ninth term, so he's way over the limit. And Senator Thurman? Wasn't he the founding father who filibustered against the Declaration of Independence? Come on, Republicans, don't make it so easy for me. Now let's go to the phones. That's a radio monologue you didn't hear last week, and not only because we in the evil dinosaur liberal media made it up. We don't matter anymore. Today, the big noise comes from talk radio. It's conservative hosts that are the kings of AM radio and the kingmakers of new Republican majority. One survey showed that hardcore listeners to the format voted 3-1 Republican. As could be expected, the host showed little interest in ribbing Newt Gingrich and the GOP. They had bigger fat to fry. Have a listen. Ken Hamblin, a hot-button black conservative on the Nazi point of view, comment that host Christine Jeffrey of Capitol Hill Job, being a bigot does not void your First Amendment rights. The self-styled Black Avenger, who is syndicated to 63 radio stations nationwide, also rallied against gun control and even against James Brady, the, quote, crippled guy for promoting it. Neil Borent's morning commentator for Atlanta's WSB on the arrest of three local boys for attempted robbery and later a fracas involving the boy's mother, when police came to her welfare house and knocked on the welfare queen's door and took her little predators away, this woman, who, by the way, was about the size of a phone booth, she obviously puts her food stamps and welfare checks to good use, she was screaming like a stuck pig because the police were taking away her little predator's welfare tickets. Away. Lady, your kids will go into the system, and they will be home in a few days. And when they grow up, they'll probably kill somebody. Maybe somebody you know, unquote. Sean Hannity bore its competition at Atlanta's WGST on the Democratic proposal to raise the minimum wage. How much more can you pay someone who flips burgers for a living? Are you willing to pay more for a burger? But the Democrats feel that they can get a lot of mileage out of this because they can create this class envy and strife, which they're masters at. The true masters are motor mouths like Hamblin, Boritz, Hannity, and the supremo, Rush Limbaugh, whose syndicated sermons are attended by 20 million people a week on 660 radio stations. Talk radio trails only country music as the nation's most pervasive format. It commandeers more than 15% of the fragmented audience, more than 1,000 talk stations, up from 210 years ago, and hundreds more with evangelical Christian commentators deliver hot chat to an avid constituency. About half of all American adults listen to the format at least once a week and at least an hour, according to Talkers Magazine. Email and other tech talk may be the third, fourth, or ninth wave of the future, but old-fashioned radio is true hyper-democracy. Very hyper. Like the backyard savants, barroom agitators, and soapbox spellbinders of an earlier era, Limbaugh and company bring intimacy and urgency to an impersonal age. Quote, if we still gather at town meetings, if our churches were still community centers, says Marvin Kalb, a former CBS reporter who is teaching at George Washington University, we wouldn't need talk radio. People feel increasingly disconnected, and talk radio gives them a sense of connection. What's new is that today the radio rightists are wired into the political process. In 1994, the scream rose to the top. These fervent spiels, in which we heard America singing, stinging, cajoling, annoying, persuading, and finally transformed the social dialogue. In a 1993 poll by the Times Mir Center for the People and the Press, 44% of Americans named talk radio as their chief source of political information. Listeners tend to be white, male,
Hale and HEP2 conservative ideas, just the audience that Republicans want to mobilize. They knew how to do it, too. Last September, when Gingrich announced the contract with America, the Republican National Committee had lined up 300 talk radio interviews for its signatories. Coordinating the blitz was Virginia's Contract Information Center, which has 500 radio talk shows on its super-efficient fax network. CIC sent a pro-contract clip and talking points to the shows. Many hosts read the material verbatim on the air. The scheme worked handsomely. The Rush Republicans went to the polls. Limbaugh's clout is immense. Former Congressman Vin Weber says Rush is as responsible as anyone else for the GOP's victory. And last week, the Democrats of Texas paid him a compliment of a Crush Rush with the Truth campaign to fight his views by heckling stations and pressuring advertisers. Limbaugh, of course, loves the attention. So now that they've won elections, ratings, the grudging acknowledgement of traditional journalists, what do they do for an encore? Some seem almost hoping for the winners to fail. If they don't perform, we're likely to put the heat on them, says David Gold of KLIF in Dallas-Fort Worth. There'll be a lot of angry folks out there, and the talk show hosts will be leading the charge. They already helped reverse Gingrich's decision on his $4.5 million book deal. Other hosts are spoiling for a fight, says Norman Resnick of KHNC in Johnstown, Colorado. Gingrich is no better than George Bush, the sort of apostasy which only true believers are capable. In this church, there are many cardinals. At one edge is San Francisco's J. Paul Emerson, a mammoth fist pounder who doesn't mind saying he hates, quote, the Japs. Toward the middle is syndicated host Michael Reagan, son of the former president. He and Limbaugh are the only persons made honorary members of the 104th Congress. Perhaps Reagan's most rebellious moment was when he said, I took on Nancy, by opposing his stepmother and supporting Oliver North for a Senate seat. Oh, somewhere on the dials you can find liberals like Mike Malloy of Atlanta's WSB, black nationalists including several hosts on the New York station WLIB, and a few leftists. Tammy Bruce, a lesbian feminist and head of the Los Angeles chapter of Now, works weekends on Los Angeles's KFI. Jim Hightower, a folksy, funny Texas populist who is nearly as quick to criticize Clinton as he is the right wing, graces 180 stations. Liberals must stop hugging trees and start kicking some ass, says liberal syndicated host Tom Likas. But even in sympathetic markets, liberals are the kickies. Surely the Bay Area is the Mecca, or as Rush would say, the Moscow of the California left, but in San Francisco, KSFO has just dropped all its moderate and liberal talk show hosts, including Likas, to go on a conservative format featuring Hamblin, Reagan, Emerson, and Pat Buchanan. What's the problem with liberals? They are genetically engineered to not offend anybody, says Tom Tradup, general manager of talk radio station WLS in Chicago. People who go on the air afraid of offending are not inherently entertaining. The trailblazer in entertaining, eager to offer conservatism, was William F. Buckley, Jr. in the early 1960s. His cutting wit had the patina of moral certitude. In a fight, his liberal opponents were often too genial to win. Buckley's heirs, William Sapphire, Buchanan, and P.J. O'Rourke, helped lift the Republicans the stigma of the pruny banker. On the radio side, conservative talk also had 50s and 60s pioneers. Cantankerous Joe Pine and Bob Grant. Grant and Limbaugh, who have broadcast back-to-back on New York City's WABC since 1988, have set the limits, one growingly, the other comic pompous for the right radio. Grant, a pro-choice conservative who can be gracious to guests and rapacious to other callers, got a dose of his own malice last fall. Frank Lautenberg, the New Jersey Democratic senator who was in a bitter race with Republican and frequent Grant guest Chuck Hashian, ran ads stating that, quote, Grant calls blacks savages and called Martin Luther King a scumbag. A tri-state fracas ensued, with New Jersey Republican Governor Christine Whitman declaring that she would no longer appear on Grant's show and citizens calling for the host's scalp and other body parts. But all the heat didn't hurt him. Whitman was soon back on the show, Grant achieved his highest ratings in the quarter of a century, and WABC now proclaims itself as the number one radio station in America. Say this, just on pugnant personality, the right-wingers are usually more entertaining hosts than the drones of radio liberalism, who share flaws with their elected counterparts. Decades of power made Democrats soft, loggy, too eager to compromise. They showed compassion, but rarely passion. By the time Limbaugh went national in 1988, the Dems could do nothing but sleepwalk into the propeller. How could they know the winning attitude of the 90s, on radio and the stump, would be to show a killer instinct? Consider, then, the plight of a group that WNYC's Brian Lehr calls the politically complex. As Lehr, host of On the Line, New York City's most thoughtful, informative talk show, notes, some people's views don't fit neatly into traditional conservatism or liberal labels. But that's not what they want in the media these days, especially in talk radio. They want you to be 100% confident that you have the truth and 100% predictable in your views. It's a comedy of clarity, a circus of certainty. But even to admit that an issue has two sides, as one Lehr caller suggests, is to admit that you're liberal. Don Imus is one liberal. Well, he did vote for Clinton, who succeeds with a comic misanthropic style he has established in 27 years of radio. In the last seven on New York City's WFAN, Imus, whose morning potpourri of talk and sharply parodied sketches is syndicated in 23 cities, has interviewed Clinton, Bob Dole, Al Fostamano, and the lot. The rest of the show revels in bad taste, spitball humor, and abolition of the fairness doctrine. It's radio freedom with vengeance. His show last Wednesday claimed that Gingrich earned his college degree from the close cover before striking University of Armpit, Georgia. The news isn't sacred to me, Imus gruffs to a reporter. It's entertainment. The show is entertainment device designed to revel in the agony of others. The radio writers offer a cloaked version of the same, but they don't care to admit it. Hot talk, shock talk, ban the speech? To me, says Straight Up, shock talk is Howard Stern, period. It's for 12-year-olds who get excited when they hear the word penis. Stern considers himself a political commentator and motivator. So does George Pataki, supported by Stern. He unseated New York Governor Mario Cuomo and saved an honored seat at his inauguration for Stern. But Howard, whose mixture of sex, politics, and humorous self-pity has made him the morning star across the country, takes consolation in his popularity. I know what my fans like, he said on the air last week. Penis, vagina. Other talk shows also know what their fans like. To be flattered with a few minutes in which to say their piece on the air, then insulted into oblivion. Tangle with WABC's host, and you risk the sharp end of their shtick. Quote Grant, "Ah, get off the phone, you sick degenerate." Lynn Samuels, "Oh, shut up." Jay Diamond, "Are you on anything? How do I know you're not popping speedballs?" And so it goes on politically perplexing insult radio. A lot of talk show hosts are opportunistic twits, says David Brunnoy, the gay libertarian with AIDS at Boston's WBZ. And the listeners hover on the brink of solipsism that they and they alone know the answer. No one says, I don't believe in my doctor anymore, so I'll just take out my own appendix. But with politics, somehow we don't need any experts. Will the mood of radio listeners change? Can the hot talk hosts continue to squirt scalding water on the body politics without one group or the other crying enough? If 1994's electoral tends to agree, there may soon be a few demons left to bitch about. And as Grant misses, those nice days when I was the only conservative on the scene, many radio writers betray the nostalgia for older foes who have become their roadkill. Cuomo, Howard Metzenbaum, and the man from Arkansas who roams the White House like the ghost of Clinton past. If these victims of radio right can have one thing in common, it's that they can talk up a storm. Now that all these victims but the president are at liberty, perhaps they could get behind the microphones and stir up a true debate between the right and the center left, or at least one hell of a shouting match. This is Mario Cuomo here to mix it up with the violent majority. Let's go to the phone.
610. on WTVN has a question for all you bigger kids. Santa didn't bring you all the toys you asked for? Well, to be fair, some wouldn't fit in that sleigh. In fact, at the giant 1995 Columbus Boat and RV Show of the 11th through the 16th, we could barely fit them all inside the State Fairgrounds multi-purpose building. We're crammed with travel trailers, cruisers, camping trailers, jet skis, motorhomes, and your chance to live large with the toy of your choice. Be caller 10 when you hear the WTVN Touchtone to win free show ticket six packs and become eligible for a $10,000 Boat and RV Show gift certificate. Your getaway, your way. Whatever floats your boat, whatever revs your RV, it's all at the Fairgrounds Multipurpose Building, the 11th through the 16th at the giant 1995 Columbus Boat and RV Show. It's a trip from your best traveling companion.
610 WTBN. Well, now that we have all the information on talk radio that we need, and certainly some interesting comment from Time Magazine and also from Radio Only Magazine, let's wrap up this edition of the National Radio Club's After Dark 5 series. I'd like to thank you for purchasing the set of tapes and giving it a listen. I'd also like to ask you, the reader of this edition, to kindly drop us some comments, either to myself or to Ken Chatterton at the National Radio Club's Publication Center, and perhaps make some suggestions on things that you would like to hear in future editions of After Dark, as well as on the DX Audio service. Perhaps you might like to hear more interviews like we did with Bruce Conti and Mark Conley, or you like the jingles and the air checks. Whatever, be sure to let us know what things you particularly like so that we can mold future editions of the DX Audio Service After Dark and also the magazine toward you, the listener. Just drop those comments on a card or a letter and send them to me here at the DX Audio Service or to Ken Chatterton. My address here is the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio 45802-5031. Or you can send them up to Ken Chatterton at the National Radio Club's Publication Center. Ken is the head honcho, should we say, of the National Radio Club, and his address is Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York. That's Mansville, New York, 13661, USA. And we would appreciate any comments that you might have concerning some of the interviews and material that we have here on the DX Audio Service. And, of course, your suggestions are very much welcome. And as we enter 1995, it's our 10th year of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. And we're looking forward to 10 years more of the DX Audio Service. Sounds like a political thing. But hopefully we'll be around for another 10, 20, or even 30 years. Who knows? We'll see what happens to radio, okay? 73, good DX, and be sure to get out there and support radio.
This is the DX Audio Service.